In just a couple of weeks, two science agencies will launch a global codathon focusing on coastal flooding. NASA and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration will provide the raw data. Participants will develop mobile apps, software, and other solutions that fit with the agency's goals in space and on Earth. For more, we turn to Ethan McMahon. He is the project manager of NASA's International Space Apps Challenge. Ethan, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
All right. So describe what's going to go on here, a codathon and focusing on coastal flooding. What will people do?
Well, you know, first I want to give a little bit more context about NASA's work related to Earth, because there's a lot of it. First, NASA monitors Earth's vital signs from 17 satellites and other observation campaigns. And this year alone, NASA is scheduled to launch 5 Earth-observing missions, which is more than any time in the last 10 years. So that helps. Second, NASA is making that data available in several ways, most recently through the Climate Data Initiative, which is a website where you can find data related to climate change that's related to coastal flooding, sea level rise, and their impacts. Which leads us to the Codathon, which is also known as the International Space Apps Challenge, or Space Apps. That's a 2-day event for people to solve challenges related to improving life on Earth and in space. So people can leverage open data from NASA and others to make useful products like mobile apps or robots. And it's taking place in 94 locations around the world and online. And people can solve 65 challenges.
So Ethan, explain to us, connect the dots between this focus on Earth this year and the 5 missions that you mentioned and this Codathon. How can this help inform your Earth missions or vice versa?
Right. Well, NASA's collecting a lot of data, mostly, again, through satellites. And the value of that data is really increased when it's combined with data from other parties, like from NOAA and EPA, and also from citizens. And this Space Apps Challenge lets people combine that data in ways that are useful to people on the ground.
So give us an example of what an app might be able to tell somebody.
Right. Well, there are a couple of examples. One is an app called Print My Watershed, and that asks people to use data about land elevation from a river basin, and then they can make a map, a 3D map, using a 3D printer. And citizens could use this map to see how rivers flow near them and where the water is cleaner or less clean, where there's more development or less development.
Is there anything that is directly tied with your current projects, your current Earth missions, or is this more of a general part of the government-wide effort to open up more and more government data to the public to use?
Yes and yes. So one of the challenges in Space Apps is the Coastal Inundation in Your Community Challenge. And that's about creating tools and providing information so communities can prepare for coastal inundation or flooding of coastal land. And that's directly related to our mission because it deals with the data that we gather. In particular, data that's in the Climate Data Initiative, which I mentioned earlier. So it draws data from there, which is from NASA and several agencies, and makes it available and encourages people to make apps that use that data to help people make decisions.
I mean, behind all this, NASA must have a model of how they hope for it to work in real life. And I'm thinking of a mudslide that took place last week in Washington State. There were warnings for 10 years from authorities that this whole mountain could collapse, and yet people still were building homes. There was construction there up until the day the thing collapsed. So how does an app or any kind of a warning situation translate into human activity so that disaster can be avoided?
Right. Well, the thing is, it's helpful to have data available in the first place ahead of time, and then you can plan for where that data will be used. And it could be in the form of warning systems. It could be in the form of models that predict where disasters may occur. And it might be in the form of apps that help people recover after disasters. And we hope that people will use the data to actually make these tools and use them.
I mean, because what people can do, what municipalities, what states can really do, they can't do anything about flooding, but what you can do is change conditions for zoning and maybe construction, because that's the only thing humans have any control over at this point, correct?
You're right, Tom. So So, yeah, so it has to do with planning ahead in various ways. So the data can be used and the tools can be used to help with zoning. For instance, making sure that, yes, houses aren't built in the way, in the locations where floods may occur or landslides may occur, or on coasts where the land may get washed away or may be required to be protected in some other way, like by adding extra sand or rock outcroppings to help beaches retain their sand.
We're speaking with Ethan McMahon. He is a project manager of the NASA International Space Apps Challenge. So, Ethan, from the agency's perspectives, I gather that you probably had to do something with this raw data to make it so accessible to people. What did you have to do?
Well, we had to make it available in the first place in the form of tables, sort of just columns and rows, and also in the form of maps. And there are also ways to make it available in a more automated way, like things that are called application programming interfaces or data services. And that lets people stream the data from the database where it's contained right to their app. All right, and that's what you see when you open up a lot of the map applications online as well. The data is being pulled in a way that's readily available as a service. So NASA has done that for its data, and that's what the whole federal government is doing with data.gov, and in particular with the climate.data.gov, which is the climate data initiative that I mentioned before. It makes that data available in one place to find, and it describes the format of the data so it can be consumed easily.
And we've been talking about apps, using the word apps, and apps implies mobile types of apps, which are different from full-fledged applications that people use in their offices and laboratories. But are those types of applications also something that you're hoping to see developed so that that are much more full-throated and do many more things than, say, a single app might be able to do?
By all means. We know that mobile apps are very, very popular and are only going to get more so over time because people want information in their hands when they can make decisions. But a lot of decisions and preparedness takes place in front of a laptop or a larger computer where you can get more detail. So, yes, we're hoping that the Space Apps Challenge actually kind of kicks off or catalyzes the development of some new ideas. The event is April 12th and 13th, and it's really expected that in 2 days people will be able to make nice prototypes, but not fully developed apps. However, over time, we hope to encourage people to go beyond just having the prototypes and have the people who would use the data and the apps talk to the people who are creating them so that they get apps that are truly useful.
And what exactly will happen over those 2 days? And I know this is global, so who do you expect to participate?
Right. The participants are going to range from scientists to citizen scientists, people who actually gather data and use it on their own, to researchers, to software developers. And it's a kind of frenzied event, actually. It's a two-day kind of sprint where in the beginning of the day, people describe the different challenges that are available, like the Coastal Inundation Challenge or the Map My Watershed Challenge. And then people break off into groups, into teams, and start to search for the data and search for understanding about what that data mean. And actually by Sunday afternoon, people present, kind of make a pitch and say, here's what we created. And they show it off to their peers and to a set of judges at each of 94 locations around the world. And the winners are selected locally and then nominated to be selected globally.
And who supplies the coffee while this is all going on?
We rely on the generosity of a lot of these people who are organizing these separate events around the world. They actually put their heart and soul into this and to help bring people together. Sometimes they work with local sponsors, IT companies or other companies who might provide food or T-shirts, the space, and so on.
But it's pretty cool that you're going to have it at 94 locations around the world. Tell us a little bit about the countries that are participating or where these people are coming from.
It's pretty much everywhere. A lot of places in the United States and in Canada and Mexico, as you might expect. But there are two or three in South Africa. I think a couple of them are in India, several in Europe, of course, several in Australia. They're just everywhere. And this is the third year that SpaceHap has existed. So people around the world are starting to become aware of it. And it's almost like it's selling itself. There's a lot of positive energy here where people want to work together to solve problems about Earth and space. And it's just a great experience, and people are coming back for more.
When I was a kid, most of NASA's resources were directed toward looking away from Earth. And then when the moon missions came in and the orbiting, we got to see, ooh, that's a pretty good-looking little blue glow we live on down there. But at this point, how much of NASA's data do you think is Earth-related versus how much is space-related?
I don't know the exact numbers, but I know that it's a big focus because what happened when astronauts were out in space is they looked back at Earth and saw that it was a fragile planet. So, you know, people hadn't seen all of Earth in one view before. And that was made people realize that we have to protect Earth as well. This is the planet we have to understand. We really have to understand our own planet.
Now, NASA, of course, contributes data and NOAA. And tell us the fundamental differences between the NOAA and the views they get from their satellites versus what NASA is able to see. I imagine you're not both looking at the same exact thing with the same exact technology.
That's right. There's a lot of coordination between a lot of the partners I mentioned. And for the Climate Data Initiative, because it's focused on coastal flooding, most of the data is coming from NOAA, U.S. Geological Survey, and Federal Emergency Management Authority, Administration, AFEMA. And the data that NOAA gets is more about oceans and the atmosphere, as their name implies. And their focus a lot of times is on the interface between oceans and land, things like that. NASA's data includes the ground cover types, so you can tell if the ground below is fields versus forests versus urban and things like that. The data work together, once you put them together, to be complementary. So you might want to know about the land cover type and what kind of weather is happening above it.
And you mentioned this is the third time that you've done this challenge. What are some of the success stories that you count from the first two times?
Right. So one app was an app that helps you find where the space station is going to be over time compared to where you are. So you can.
I get that.
You do? All right.
Yeah. Great. Is that the thing you sign up and you get an email alert?
That's right.
Yes. It's always at an inconvenient time, but okay. So, but our listeners might not know about it. Why don't you tell us about it?
Right, right. So you can sign up and say, you know, and tell me when give me a notification, like a text or an email, 10 minutes before the space station is going to fly over me so I can watch for its path in the sky. Hopefully it's at night when you could see it. And you'll be able to spot it. So, Emily, if you really want to make that a priority, you're going to have to get out there and plan ahead and stand out in the field or something so you can see it. But it's kind of cool that you could be connected to something that's orbiting Earth.
Yeah, I love the idea. I've never taken advantage of it, but I always get those emails. Mm-hmm. Ethan McMahon is the project manager of the NASA International Space Apps Challenge. Ethan, thanks for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much.